Yeah, I feel like those football teams you'll hear of, you know, that they have a week off. They're almost unbeatable. You know, preparing for a class, usually like doing a high school class, you had to come up with something every week, you know, so you're kind of trying to stay on top of it. That time I was working, so, but now being, you know, laid off and knowing about this for months in advance, you know, you feel like, oh, you got everything you need. But, yeah, the last time I taught an adult class here at Harlan was probably over in the old building for Gene Filling. You know, on Sunday mornings he used to teach that. And once in a while he'd leave and he'd ask me to do it, but it's been a while. But, yeah. The topic that I've been given was, or I should say I chose, was, does it matter how a Christian makes his living? And the reason I chose it is because I've just got so many examples of things that have happened in my life and working life of where these principles, let's say, were violated or, you know, and we'll go through some of that. But in typical Wednesday night fashion, I guess you got to start off with a few jokes, you know. Two hunters are in a woods, and this is kind of a version of one that you've probably heard before, maybe a little twist. When one of the hunters collapses, he's not breathing, and his eyes are glazed. The other one whips out his cell phone, you know, and calls 911 and says, "What should I do?" He's in a panic, you know, and the operator says, "Well, first, calm down. Make sure he's dead." There's a silence, then a shot. He gets back on the phone. "Okay, now what?" Did you hear they arrested the devil? They got him on possession. Two Hollywood stars ran into each other at a psychiatrist's office, coming and going. And one says to the other, "Are you coming or going?" The other one says, "Well, if I knew that, I wouldn't be here." Okay, one more. At a weekly alumni meeting, a football coach showed the most recent game film, and a question from one of the alumni who was proud to say that he had played, you know, 25 years ago, and his son was playing now, he said, "Why has it taken so long for the defense to get into the backfield?" And the coach said, "We're not sure, but we think it could be hereditary." Yeah. Okay. Yeah, does it matter how a Christian makes his living? There's some obvious directions you could go with this, and I could name a few. Women working in a nightclub, probably not a Christian thing to do. Driving a beer truck, you know, probably not a Christian thing to do. But you can take all kind of different avenues of that, you know. I mean, would you want to work in a restaurant as a waitress? Is it okay? I know our granddaughter Natalie works, you know, at a pizza place that does not serve alcohol. But, you know, are there pizza places that do serve alcohol? Would a Christian be okay to work there, you know? We think, well, probably not, you know. But what about a checkout? You know, you can't go to a grocery store that doesn't sell alcohol anymore. Is it okay, you know, if you're working at a checkout, you know, and you're ringing up people buying alcohol? And, you know, there's just all kind of little tweaks that you can think about is it okay what I'm doing? Am I promoting this activity or this behavior? Or am I saying it's okay? You know, I don't know. But anyway, I'll read the foreword of what the lesson here has. Does it really matter to God how we earn our living, make our money? We sustain our families and our giving to God and others. We believe the above passage in the Old Testament answers this question, at least indirectly, if not directly. The Bible gives many principles by which we can be governed, not only in how we use our money, but how we obtain it. Underlyingly, this question, issues of honesty and integrity, and that's kind of what I titled the lesson, you know, A Life of Honesty and Integrity. And we'll go some other directions here that may not necessarily be with how you earn your living, but how you look at money or how you spend your money, or, you know, how you just, you can tell a lot about people about how they think about money and how they, we believe it matters to God, not only how we earn our living, but how we behave on the job as well. And we'll talk about some of that too. The scripture reference they give here is Deuteronomy 25:13 through 16, if somebody wants to pop up and read that. Deuteronomy 25:13 through 16.
You shall not have your bag in differing weights, a large and a small. You shall not have in your house different measures, a large and a small. You shall have a full and just weight. You shall have full and just measure, that your days will be prolonged in the land, for the Lord your God gives you. For everyone who does these things, everyone who acts unjustly, is an abomination to the Lord your God.
Okay, we're going to hear a lot of that in the scriptures we read over and over about what the Lord considers, you know, trying to be unfair and fair in our dealings. The first one is, what is an abomination to the Lord? In Proverbs 11:1, somebody could read that if they want.
The Lord abhors dishonest scales, but an accurate weight is his delight.
And Proverbs 20:10.
Differing weights and differing measures, both of them are abominable to the Lord.
Okay, so the idea is used to cheat people. Are you trying to cheat people? And you probably, we can see examples of this in our daily life, things we do. And you see what God's feeling on it is. It's an abomination. It's perversity is the term I want to use in the next question, is what can destroy a Christian. In Proverbs 11:3, if you notice, basically the whole chapters of Proverbs 11 and 12 are, if you just sit down and read those, it's just on and on and on of this kind of things that matter about your character, your integrity, your inner person, who you are. Proverbs 11:1, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. That was a big thing back in the day when, you know, they weighed out certain items of high value on a tippy scales, and they had an ounce over here, and they would put an ounce over here. If this ounce of their weight was shaved a little bit or added a little weight too, you know, it would take more to, or less, you know, whatever, depending on whether they were buying or selling, you know, whether they were buying something from you, they'd put on a heavier weight, and they didn't weigh as much, you know. And then if they were selling, you know, they could change it around. The same kind of thing that we can see today. The word I like in the original King James, Gary, is perversity. And that's a word we don't hear much. I looked it up. Unreasonable or unacceptable. Contrariness. That probably, things that just are so against what is right, it's obvious, you know. I think about, you know, in the summer they put the wagon up here by Maysville with the corn in it, you know. And I wonder, I said to my, how many times do you think people go in there, take a dozen and don't even pay? Or, you know, take a half a dozen and, you know, I wonder. I don't know. They must be making money. They keep doing it. But I just wonder how many people and, you know, people that probably consider themselves to be Christian, you know, take a couple extra because maybe these feel a little small, you know. Just makes you wonder. And then perversity, yeah, being deliberately contrary. Have you ever went to a restaurant with somebody who likes to make a scene, or like service is never good enough, or, you know, they just want to complain about everything, you know. It seems like everything is always bad for them. And it seems like when they're with a group of people, they want to make it worse and, you know, kind of make a scene. And it seems like some guys just thrive on that. And it can be embarrassing. And you hope, I hope that you don't know Christians maybe that do that, but you probably do. I had a foreman at Goodrich who was, as a young man, he was a Golden Glove boxer. And to us, that probably don't mean a lot, but 50 years ago, it was a big thing in the inner cities, in the big cities especially. They take kids just to get them off the street and put them in these boxing leagues, you know, and let kids pen out their aggression kind of thing. But anyway, you didn't have to know this guy very long that he'd let you know that. And he was probably in his 60s then. This was probably 20 years ago. He was a foreman. I was doing a stint as temporary foreman from time to time at Goodrich. He was a quality foreman, so he'd be called to a tire machine, whatever, to help out. You know, this machine's not making a tire the way it's supposed to. And he was good. He knew his business very well. But he'd come back and he'd tell you, you know, about this encounter with certain person that was a big guy. This foreman, he wasn't very big, but he always was one of these guys. He always had to roll up his shirt, you know, and show you his muscle beach. Always made sure you could see that, but he'd come back and he'd relay to you what had happened, you know, the experience. And it just was almost without fail. He'd tell you, I got right up in his face, and put his hand out in front of him. I got right up in his face and I told him, this is the way it's going to be. This is what you got to do. You got to make this, you know, you got to pay attention to this and that. And then you'd go talk to the guy, or you'd see the guy later, you know, and you'd ask him about the encounter, and he'd be like, it was never anything like that, you know. It was never anything confrontational. He just come out and said, this is what you got to do. But he always wanted to relay that. And there were times when he really would have a confrontation with somebody. And he always, but he always relayed that. And it was like, I was got right up in their face. But people would avoid calling him. People would avoid asking for his help, because it just got to where, you know, there was a contention. You know, you knew there was going to be something that was going to be argumentative about the guy. And another thing, you know, just you'd avoid people like that, George.
You mentioned that being on maintenance, we get like operator will run a machine, and when it breaks down, they'll call one of us, whether it's an electrician or millwright, to come and see if we can fix it for them. There are certain maintenance guys that the operators will avoid calling at all costs, because they know it's going to be a hassle when they show up. That's why, as a Christian especially, if I show up, and I've got this reputation at work, that I show up, I fix your machine, I do what you need to get it done so we can all just do our job and go home. And they like to call me. But there are certain people that they avoid calling at all costs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I've seen that at Goodrich, too, maintenance guys that, like, hey, you know, they'd call, we need a mechanic or something over here and this and that, and make sure you don't send this guy, you know, they're talking to the maintenance foreman. Send this other guy, because we want somebody that'll get the job done and we can get along with and won't holler at you or blame you for breaking something, you know. But, yeah. So all those things kind of matter about what kind of impression that you leave, that you make on other people around you. All right, what's wrong, or what is the wrong way to get wealth? Let's look at Proverbs 21:6. Somebody wants to jump up and read that.
The getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a fleeing vapor, the pursuit of death.
Okay. That last part, that's a pretty stark. Is a fleeting fantasy of those who seek death? Wow. That's comparing you know, getting wealth or material gain by deceit, by doing something wrong, is like those that seek death. That's pretty pretty stark, isn't it? Yeah. And then the next one, do the above passages indicate that it's wrong to gain money through dishonest means? Well, obviously the answer is yes. Let's look at 2 Thessalonians 3, 10 and 12. 2 Thessalonians 3, 10 and 12. Somebody wants to read that.
For even when we were with you, we used to give you this command: if anyone is not willing to work, neither should he eat. For we hear that some among you are living in an undisciplined life, not doing their own work, but meddling in the work of others. Now such people we command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to work quietly and still provide their own food to eat.
Okay, there's a verse you've often heard, you know. A lot of these verses that I'm probably reading are probably ones that other guys that have done these lessons on. A lot of this whole lesson is about, you know, how we earn our living or what we do in the workplace, the impression that we leave, the influence, the example that we set. So a lot of these verses are repeats, but it doesn't matter. They apply to this topic as well. And I think it's funny that you see in the same verse, the same passage, that those that don't work shall not eat. And then it goes in verse 11 there. We hear there's those among you that walk in disorderly manner, not working, but are busybodies. That's in the same phrase, not working, but are busybodies. So what's that say? You know, you've heard the proverb, like not a biblical proverb, but it's probably an unbiblical idea. Idle mind is the devil's workshop. You know, if you don't have something to do, you know, you probably need to find something to do. My dad was always good at that, you know. My friends would come over, and if dad was home, we were pretty much going to work, you know. He's going to find something because he's trying to run them off. But it usually worked. You know, they were usually gone somewhere. And, dad was a big believer in stay busy, do something. The next one, is the extra money gained dishonestly worth the loss of a soul? Another obvious question. No. And I've heard Dave say it before. You know, would you sell your soul for $1 million? How about 10 million? But we probably sell our soul for a lot less. You know, we do things that where we compromise, you know, that we probably shouldn't. Let's look at Matthew 16, 25 and 26. Somebody wants to read that one. Matthew 16, 25 and 26.
For whoever will save his life shall lose it. For whoever will lose his life for life's sake, shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?
I looked up some statistics. You know, about this, with this topic came to my mind. How much do you think employers lose from employees? How many of you, you don't have to show a hand, but, you know, need a bottle of whiteout at home, hey, you just go to the office storeroom and get one, or a pen that you, hey, that's a pretty nice pen, I could use that to write down my scripture verses, you know, and you, Yeah, is there a conflict there? You know, but I know we do it. You know, or you're at work, and if you're on the actual working side, you know, I need a quarter inch bolt at home. You know, inch and a half long. I don't have one. You know, just go to the storeroom, and you can find one there pretty easy. Or, you know, I used to carry stuff out of places I worked. The stuff you just pick up off the floor. Goodrich was. George probably can testify to this. A big plants like this seem to be worse than small places that can. But, I mean, there were maintenance guys. I would work close to a maintenance area, and maintenance guys, you know, pretty much get whatever they need to do a job. And if they need a drill bit, you go to the storeroom. They don't give you one drill bit. You know, I need a 3/16 drill. They give you a whole set. Well, they've already got a whole set in their toolbox, you know, in their bicycle tray, of every drill bit from 16th to half inch. And you go to the storeroom and they just give you a whole bag of new ones. But what happens to them ones in the bike? They just right in the dumpster. 90% of them never been in a drill. You know, they're brand new drill bits, but they give you a whole new set. Yeah. So I said all that to say this. It's pretty hard for me to walk by a dumpster and look in there and see 27 new drill bits that are just. And what's the company lose? You tell yourself, well, just the price of scrap. You know, it's like 4 cents a pound. That handful of drill bits, the company probably gets 12 cents for, you know. But to me, it's a new drill bit.
You know, we all make mistakes from time to time. But I had a gentleman that I worked with that decided that his church needed some paper towels. So he stole them from the church or from the company bathroom.
Yeah. Well, anyway, some of the stats, it's estimated that employees cost businesses billion a year. That's employees cost employers $50 billion a year. And, yeah, 57% is committed by company insiders and outsiders. I found that insiders-outsiders thing interesting. But if you ever worked in management in business, and you kind of see how that could work. I used to do trucking at a company I used to work for and purchasing and stuff like that. And a lot of these people you buy from, and in bigger corporations I've heard it's even worse, will say, well, we'll sell you this widget for $1 a piece. And if you buy it from us, you know, the competitor's selling it for $1.25, we'll sell it to you for $1. And come Christmas time, I'll make you a check for 10 cents a piece on, you know, 50,000 that we bought from you to you as the buyer, you know, the purchaser. You know, you're getting in some shady area. The company don't know anything about it. Yeah, you can see real easy how it'd be easy to take some. They encourage you to, yeah, take a little. The trucking industry was the same way. Sorry, John, you didn't have nothing to do with it. But guys, salespeople, the trucker, you know, trucking salespeople would say, yeah, if you start using us for your freight, we'll make you, you know, give you so much less per hundredweight, you know, of, and then at the end of the year, we'll take your whole office out for, you know, a big party, because, you know, that money's coming from somewhere, you know, and, or sometimes it's a little more under the table. It's directed at you. And I can't tell you how many times in that job I got, you know, just they walk in and they hand you free stuff, golf umbrella or hats. You know, I got, at one time I probably had over 500 hats, and most of them had never been worn. And I'm not saying that's wrong or anything, but it's, you know, when you walk by other office people and they see the salesman handing you free stuff, you know, it grinds a little, and they complain. And anyway, let me go on with some of the details. So company insiders and outsiders, 22% is by employee theft. 20% of data breaches are caused by employees. The average dishonest retail employee costs their employer over $1,500 That's retail employees, like people that work at, you know, Walmart or Kohl's or whatever. It'd be real easy to take advantage of things in there. You know, the cops or the undercover people are watching for shoplifters going out the front door, but they're not watching so much for, you know, people that work in the back, you know, and just grab a pair of socks and stuff them in your bag and away you go, you know. It'd be real easy. 43%, this one may touch on some of us. 43% of employees exaggerate how many hours they work. Or, you know, I don't know how, Goodrich used to have to fill out how many, I knew George would pop up on that one. How many tires you built. I mean, I knew guys that, you know, your machine count how many tires you built. Say you build 200. And down in Curien, they need 200 of that tire per shift. Well, their counters are only showing there was 150 went through. But you said you made 200. Not going to take long before they figure that out. And I can name a dozen guys that were fired over this kind of thing, you know, because of repeat. And they don't get you the first time. You know, they let it build. They start a little chart.
Now, we get paid by the hour at work, so our bosses keep track of our hours. But when I was a mechanic, we got paid by what's called flat rate. And what flat rate is, the book says a job takes 2 hours. You get paid 2 hours to do that. Now, if you can get it done in an hour, you still get paid 2 hours for it. But if it takes you 3 hours, you still get paid 2 hours for it.
You eat it. Yeah.
And we've had some guys that I used to work with, and we just called them scammers, because they would have 40 hours turned by Wednesday. Because what they would do is they would bring your car in. One guy was a drivability guy specifically. He'd bring your car in, and if you had a check engine light on, they have a trouble tree you're supposed to go down through to diagnose the problem. Well, he would skip everything on that and go down to the last box that said what to replace. And he'd replace that. And if it fixed it, great. He got paid for diagnosing it and didn't have to diagnose it. He just replaced it. Just a parts replacer. And if that didn't fix it, he'd go to the next block up and replace that part. And just kept replacing parts until he got it right. But then he would charge, if it was under warranty, he'd charge the company or he'd charge the customer the full diagnostic time. So you'd get a bill for 6 or 7 hours and it took him 15 minutes to fix it.
Yeah, that sounds familiar to Dakota, doesn't it? Dakota works that way too. You know, you get a job. Oh, it's supposed to take you 2 hours to replace this bumper on this car. But, you know, if you can do it less, good for you. If it takes more, yeah, bad for you. But anyway, a lot of where fraud cases are involved in cash, assets, sensitive data, companies lose an average of $1.7 million per employee. And only 56% of companies that conduct an investigation into their worst fraud incident. So most of them don't even pursue it. I know Josh could talk to, has said things about things that come up missing, you know, at VOTAW, where, you know where it went. Just, you know, it comes to a matter, you can't prove it. At Goodrich, they've even hired private investigators, and I bet George can testify to this, about people that are on FMLA. I don't know if you know what FMLA is, Family Medical Leave Act. Started back in, I think, the Clinton administration, was a big thing. And it starts out, it sounds like a good premise, you know, like if your wife's having a baby anymore, you know, the guy gets as much time off as the woman, which, mind-blowing to me. But anyway, be that as it may, it's all subsidized by the government. And they're pretty stringent rules on how you can get it. I tried to get it one time for a friend of mine had it for kidney stones, chronic kidney stones. You know, he had x-rays and he had six of them in there. Pam can had six of them in there. They're going to come out sometime. So he gets FMLA. And whenever he has a pain, you know, he's calling FMLA. They cannot refuse you that time off. They have to give it to you. However, if you still have vacation left, they pay you vacation that you have earned. Once your vacation is gone, they don't have to pay you, but they still have to give you time off, which you think, oh, well, that sounds good. The company is wrong. Each department in the company has absentee replacement guys. They may have, say they got 25 people in the department, they got two ARs. They allow two people off a day. That's it. And if your seniority is less than those guys that's got it off, you're not getting it. You know, you can't have it without getting it counted against you. But if you got FMLA, you're golden. Well, we've already got our two ARs called for. We can't cover those other jobs unless they can call in overtime, which costs the company more money, or we can't fill it at all. A lot of times departments have to shut down because too many people out on FMLA day. Guess what today is? You know, it's an NFL playoff day, you know. Everybody's sick on NFL playoff day. Or a big college, you know, Michigan, Ohio State game, you know, nobody comes to work. You can set your clock by these people that have it. Like I said, I tried to get it for the same thing, kidney stones. I went and had an X-ray, and hey, you got 12 of them in there. They're going to come out sooner or later. And nope, you can't have it. Couldn't get it, you know. Yeah, a couple weeks later, you know, I had a kidney stone bout, and I had to miss. And, you know, you end up taking time off or taking the points against you, you know. Yeah, it just seemed like, yeah, you can't get it when you need it. But anyway, they have people that, investigators I heard they hired to go out and watch, look for people who were abusing the system, but they had so much abuse. And one guy I know, and my kids are going to know who this is, had a carnival truck that he sold cheese curds. I shouldn't even say that because you cheese curds at a lot of the fairs around here. And, well, you're working at Goodrich, you know, on my schedule. You worked every other weekend. You don't always have the weekend off you want when it comes to these carnivals in the summer. It didn't matter. He took FMLA, and I don't even know what he had it for. But he'd take FMLA, and he'd go run his cheese trucks, you know, and fine and dandy for a while. And then one day he's serving cheese curds, and here's a personnel manager, you know, from Goodrich, and he's handing cheese curds. And the guy's like, isn't this your weekend to work, Mike? Oh, I even said his name. Sorry. Wrong Mike. But anyway, you guys wouldn't. Nobody would know him. I don't. My kids would. But, yeah, well, that was the end of Mike. You know, he was gone a few weeks later and, you know, fired him, you know, on the spot. But so these kind of things, you know, where we tweak and twist the limits of honesty is pretty easy to do. All right, well, I guess we can do a couple more. Nobody's lined up yet. What's so important about being honest in our dealings? Look at Luke 8:15. Luke 8:15. Go ahead, Dylan.
In the seed and the good soil, these are the ones who have heard the word and in an honest and good heart and hold it fast and bear fruit with perseverance.
So we see here the lesson. This, you may think, what's that got to do with this? The seed that sown in the ground will produce a bounty. Good, honest, clean sowing of work or will produce a return. Romans 12:17, it's kind of a different little twist on this. Somebody wants to get that one. Romans 12:17.
Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men.
Yeah, how many times do you hear, yeah, I'll get back for that. I will get even for that. And even Christians, you know, we talk about, yeah, that's not gonna set very well. I'm gonna have to look for a way to get even with that. Yeah, we don't always have to think about getting even. I think we'll call it right there. I just knew I was gonna get done in one night, but I guess that's not going to happen. So thank you, and we'll take up next week.